what it is. It's basketball. It's not a f***ing soft sport.
I love it, Gabe. I love it.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the NBL Pocket Podcast. First things first, like the show, subscribe, and share it, either word of mouth or on the internet if you like the show. Always appreciate that sort of feedback. I think the show's available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and a few other places. I'm very open to engagement, so if you're keen with a question or a request or a suggestion or a wish or a want, fire away. You can find me at Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and Gmail. So my Twitter is NBL Pocket Pod, and Facebook it's NBL Pocket Podcast, and the Gmail is nblpocketpodcast@gmail.com. If you're keen on making your own podcast and want info, whatever, by all means, send me a message. My guest today is Liam Santamaria, commentator, writer, star of NBL Overtime, and all-around NBL nice guy. We had a lovely chat, and we talk about, amongst other things, the Perth Wildcats personnel. Do they have the right mix? We talked about Melbourne United's play and really a dissection of David Barlow. We talked about the officiating of Sydney versus Melbourne. Cooks and Prather, who will we see first and in fit and healthy? Sean Long's play of late. Brisbane Bullets Island and Santa's SOS. If you saw Liam's tweets, which is at Liam Santa. Brisbane's off-season and how it played out on the court. We also go into a number of teams and how their off-season wishes are playing out in the season thus far. We talked about Illawarra without Brooks and their import options. We talked about which teams were interested in Cam Oliver. Most importantly, which teams were interested, which teams passed on Cam Oliver, and which teams were gutted on missing out on Cam Oliver. That's a very interesting discussion. Definitely find out which one of those teams falls into those categories. We talked about the Breakers, their situation, and Braswell, both on and off the court with the Breakers. And then we talked, lastly, about the love or hate triangle between Cairns, Perth, and Illawarra. Did Liam have any suggestion as to how those games amongst those three teams have played out the way they have? Really enjoyed chatting with Liam. Great rapport. And follow him on Twitter. And of course, tune in to NBL Overtime this Tuesday. But for now, this is Liam Santamaria. Liam, my first question is, when you're watching a game, and let's go from this from two angles. When you're watching it with the purpose of writing about it afterwards, and when you're actually commentating it, what is the difference in your style? Like, do you take notes while you're doing it, or you just kind of have a feel for the game? What do you do?
Well, I guess I watch every game with the idea that I'm probably going to be writing about it in some way, shape, or form. Given I kind of cover the whole league rather than kind of a beat writer for an individual team, that's how I approach watching all games. But, you know, when I'm at home and watching the games, I'm just kind of watching it like everybody else, I guess, just from a sort of fan's perspective, enjoying the game, watching what's playing out. I do keep a notepad nearby just to jot certain things down, like lineups or you know, things I noticed that a coach might have done, or you know, things like that, things that stand out at the time, and then something for me to kind of keep an eye on or look back on to see if it kind of played out in an impactful way across the game. But yeah, no, when I'm at home not calling the game, I'm just taking it in.
And do you watch like the game, let's say for either or, let's say when you're writing, do you watch the game once, do you take the commentary off or watch it twice? Like, do you have a little method to really get the nuts and bolts of the game?
I always have the commentary on, because I'm interested to hear what the guys are saying or the girls are saying, and also just the atmosphere of the game. You know, I like to hear the whistles and the crowd and the interactions. I like the mic on the refs, and you can hear what's, you know, gives you a sort of feeling like you're right there courtside and you can hear what's going on. But I do a lot of rewinding, a lot of pausing and rewinding, and I get a lot of, when I'm watching from home, I get a lot of games ruined, the results of games ruined for me by notifications on my phone, because I'm very rarely
on time.
Right. Yeah, I'm either, you know, and those who, you know, my close friends, those who know me well now message me and say, how far back are you? And I'll say, oh, I'm late in the third quarter. And they'll say, all right, call me after the game. Because, yeah, I do a lot of rewinding, watching plays again, and that kind of holds me back.
Right. Fair enough. Liam, let's jump through. Let's have a look at last round. I got a bunch of questions for you. Let's start at what was the beginning of last round? So Perth, Adelaide. My question about that one is predominantly about the Wildcats. Are you worried about the Wildcats from a personnel standpoint? I mean, that was a poor performance. Do you look at that team and say they've got holes that aren't going away with a change in strategy or intent or what have you?
Well, I guess whenever we assess that, we kind of use the comparison of what they've previously had, right, or what other teams have around the league. And in terms of what they previously had, I mean, they missed a couple of big pieces from last year, obviously. I mean, Angus Brandt and Tom Jervis, two really big, experienced bodies who kind of know what it takes to get it done, and to use Trevor Gleeson's catchphrase, they knew Wildcats basketball inside and out. And they were very familiar with his system, and I think losing both those guys in the offseason was a big hit, and they haven't really filled those spots to the same level in Dario Hunt and Majuk Majuk. I'm a believer in Dario Hunt. I think he's a good player, and he's a chance over the course of the season to become a really good starting center in that system. But there's definitely work to be done with him, especially at the defensive end of the floor, and we saw that. I mean, Daniel Johnson just put a microscope on that big time over the weekend. And certainly some of that, you know, that veteran experience off the bench that Greg Hyer gave them is something that they don't have. Wagstaff, you know, returning to form this season helps in that regard, but Hyer was a guy that they could draw on that changed games with off the bench and with his hustle and his defense and his offensive rebounding. And in Reese Vague, who is primarily playing those minutes, he's not really doing that. You know, I can't remember a game this season where you say, wow, Reese Vague kind of turned that thing around, and those minutes he gave in the second quarter when they were falling behind really turned it around, which is what you would say
with Greg Hyer
pretty regularly with Greg Hyer.
Last year when they played Adelaide and he gave away that unsportsmanlike foul that kind of against Harry Froehling, that the crowd went mental, and you can feel the shift. You're very right.
Yeah, and I mean, you also think about game four of the grand final series in Melbourne where things were getting away for them in the second quarter, and he came in and turned that game around with some offensive boards and some impact defensively. So yes, they're missing those things. So they haven't really filled them necessarily. I still think that they have the chance to get to a level where they can ask some questions of either Sydney or Melbourne in a final series. And obviously a lot of that depends on them having home court, because that's a big thing. They've taken a couple of losses there against Cairns and Adelaide this season, but Perth in the jungle is always a problem to be solved. And if they can do enough, which they've done enough so far, to hang on to that second spot to the point where they're taking on, say, Melbourne in a semi-final series, I still think they have enough on that roster to make that series an issue for Melbourne and potentially beat them.
I think it's what, like, you look at this time last year, this sort of round 9, 10 through, I think, 14, they went 3-5. It's their traditional slump. We talked about them getting home court. Like, they've got to find a way to fight tradition to get even close to that home court. Yeah, so that's the tough road that they face. Let's go to the Melbourne.
Just the other thing on Perth. They have been very inconsistent defensively this season, which is really unlike them. And, I mean, they currently rank 7th in defensive efficiency over the course of the whole season, which, that's just not BAM. And it's not championship winning basketball in the NBL. Teams don't win championships when that's what they've produced over the course of the year. So they've got some serious work to do in that regard. And but I do have faith in that system, you know, and that infrastructure and Trevor Gleeson, that over the course of the rest of the year, that they're a good chance to get there.
What do you think about the whole, like, Damian Martin, Mitch Norton? Like, Damian Martin's looked a bit off. Like, he's starting to present himself as, well, whatever his age is, mid-30s, sorry. What do you think about that? Like, could they bump up Norton, change the starting lineup, or is that too drastic a change?
I would start Norton. I thought Norton was going to start coming into the year. Because, you know, obviously, and that's no disrespect to Damian Martin at all, or a comment on what I think that he can provide. But, I mean, well, sorry, I guess it is. I still think that in certain patches, he can be a really high-level, impactful player. Like we saw, we've seen that already this season. You think of their win in Adelaide a few weeks ago and how huge he was down the stretch of that game with defensive hustle plays, offensive rebounds, kind of getting the ball in the right spots. He was, you know, arguably the MVP of that game, along with, you know, Nick Kay, Dario Hunt, the things they did, those guys did, without putting big points on the board. But with his age, he's struggling to kind of play at that level for the sort of length of stretches that he used to do. Yeah. So I would start Mitch Norton if I was Trevor Gleeson. I'd make that change and use Martin off the bench. Okay. And just kind of flip that a little bit. I mean, we've talked about whether Lamanis should do that in Brisbane at the center spot and throw his kind of young wolf out there at the start, and then the experienced sort of head off the bench. If I was him, I would definitely be looking to do that in Perth.
Well, I think also, like we talked about Greg Hire before, like it's almost as if Mitch Norton assumes the role of what Damian Martin did last year, and then Damian Martin kind of becomes that long-standing wildcat off the bench, defensive-minded, rebounding-minded. Could work. Melbourne-Sydney. Let's have a think. Would I be right in saying that loss and the way it was, because it was not a good look for them, was that primarily due to no Shea Ilion-Pledger, or is there more at play than that? And an unhealthy Prather.
Yeah, I mean the lineups have a lot to do with it. I mean, you look at Sydney, they also had a few big names and good players sitting out as well, right? You bring Lish and Cooks, and Moller's been terrific this season back in. True. And there's a lot of quality there. Their depth of talent is incredible. But I think Shea Ili, I mean, it's an interesting question, because I think he's really important for that team this season. And he has been really good for them in some of their recent wins and throughout that six-game winning streak. And in the game that they beat Sydney, he was massive. In his minutes off the bench, guarding Casper Ware.
Scoring as well.
Knocking down those three-point looks that they gave him. And so I was coming into this week, and as soon as I heard that Shea Ili wasn't going on that road trip, I thought, uh-oh, Scott Machado and Casper Ware without Shea Ili.
They had big ones.
That's going to be a problem. Mm. Certainly played out that way. So I think that was a big factor. I think Sydney is a better team than Melbourne are. And so it's no surprise to see them win. It's no surprise to see them win healthily at home. But certainly with Shea Ili back in the lineup, I think they're a much better chance of making life tough and potentially beating the Kings.
I think Pledger as well, like he helps that big rotation. Like I just felt like Long was kind of coming out at times, and then JLA came in. He's very good, but he's sort of inconsistent at times, both game to game and minute to minute. So it's like, it just, when Pledger's there, that rotation just makes a little bit more sense in the front court. What did you think of the whistle, Liam? 50 foul calls.
We heard it a lot, didn't we?
Mm-hmm.
It was a great call from Peter Hawley on the commentary when he likened it to a techno concert with all the whistles going off.
A lot of whistles. But not unwarranted, didn't you feel? Like, Casper was just, wherever he wanted to go, he was getting by guys, and guys were, like, grabbing him from behind. They were a step slow, and when you're that step low, you get called for fouls.
Yeah. I mean, they forced the issue. They were the aggressors. Yeah. And I think what happened was that they played that way right out of the gate, and it put the onus on the officials to see how they're going to call it, and they whistled them every time early. And obviously the refs know, you know, that what anyone ever says about them is, we're just looking for consistency. And so once they start calling a game that way, they're going to, and they need to keep calling it that way. And so I think the Kings did a great job of setting that tone early, and Will Weaver even spoke about it post game about the conversations he has with the officials. You know, like, different coaches work officials differently during the game. Some berate them. Will Weaver has dialogue with them, and he was saying, look, I chat with them at the start of the game to find out, okay, cool, so how are we calling certain things? He used the example of like face guarding on blockouts. Mm-hmm. So is that going to be a foul tonight? Because if that's not going to be a foul, we're going to face guard Sean Long down the other end, keep him off the glass. And I think it made it pretty clear the approach in that game was, let's really ask some questions of their defense, put it on the space, the floor, put it on the... I mean, this is how they approach every team. Mm. But certainly guys like Melo, Trimble, Sean Long, there's question marks over their ability to defend in this way. Mm. Let's see if they can stay in front of us. Let's get to the foul line. Let's see if we're getting rewarded by putting some heat on the rim. And in the end, they were. Now, over the course of the game, I think there was a lot of stuff that could have been let go.
I agree.
It was an over-officiated game, no doubt.
But consistent.
The way it was being played, I think it created a perfect storm of just a whole bunch of fouls.
Because we didn't see, it wasn't too dissimilar from what happened up in Cairns. And I'm really launching into like a David Barlow question here, where he was on for maybe 8 to 12 minutes in either game, five fouls and was gone. A lot of free throws up in Cairns as well. Not the number that there was against Sydney, but certainly in the high 20s. My question with Barlow, like what did you see there? Like he just had a horror weekend, or is there a bit more to it?
I think a bit of both. I felt for him yesterday when every time he came,
Charlie Brown couldn't do anything right.
It was like Lucy was pulling that football out from underneath his feet, and every time he came in the game, he just copped a call. But I do think that there's a little bit more to it in that. I mean, Jayshon Tate's a nightmare matchup for him. I mean, he's a nightmare matchup for most guys, right? I mean, he's too quick for traditional fours, and he's too strong for undersized fours. And Barlow kind of falls sort of halfway between that category. And in the end, he was both too quick and too strong for him, which is not something you often say about Dave Barlow, somebody being too strong for him. But those matchups Jayshon Tate, he got a couple of fouls against Cam Oliver in sort of similar circumstances in the game on the Friday night. And I do think that Melbourne United, I don't think over the course of the off-season they were planning on Barlow starting again this year at the four spot. And there are a few teams that were going through free agency and through the import recruiting process looking for starting fours who didn't really end up getting one, right? I mean, the Brisbane Bullets is an obvious example. And I think Melbourne as well, they kind of were... I think the plan was to get a four, and then they found Prather available and sort of went in a different direction. And then they're like, all right, well, let's see what we can make it work. Barlow was great last year between him, Smith Milner. They then signed Joe Lualua-Chul, and they're like, well, by committee, we can get the job done at the four spot. But I actually think the four spot has become much quicker and more athletic this year than it was last year. Barlow was, tight. I mean, you look across the league with Brisbane, that matchup was Bairstow last year.
Now it's Patterson, I suppose,
Now it's Patterson or Braun or Singler, someone like that. You look at in New Zealand, that was Ty Wesley last year, and now it's, I mean, it's been Tom Abercrombie for a whole bunch of minutes,
Bradley,
a bit
maybe,
of Finn Delaney. In Cairns, it was who was it, Rob Lowe and Alex Loughton at the four last year.
Lucas Walker as well.
Right. Now it's Majuk Deng, and he's a completely different matchup. So... And who was in Illawarra? Brian Conklin was the big bruising foreman in Illawarra. So a lot of big bodies that. And last year we were constantly talking about how great Barlow was playing because he was one of the best post defenders in the league, combined with his ability to step out, stretch those fours, and shoot the three. And this year, you watch all those fouls that he picked up over the weekend. They were trying to slide his feet and stay in front of guys that were driving. And he didn't have to do as much of that last season. So I think that spot's changed, and that's become a bit of a challenge for him.
The guy who would have been nice to hang on to would have been Venky Joyce. Quick, athletic, at the hoop, but that's for another day. Does Sydney have a weakness? Like, if you had to strip that team away and go, how do you beat this team that's, 10-1, 11-1, or whatever it is? I feel like it's got to be, you got to attack Bogut, and you've got to treat Casper Ware like he's Bryce Cotton. just blitz him on pick and rolls, double team, mm-hmm. take it out of his hands. Tate, I don't know what you do about Tate. I don't know what matchup works for you, but that would be my very sort of broad arching answer to that question.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to have to play close to a perfect game. You're going to have to play really, really well. And almost all the things that you've put on the whiteboard as the keys to your game plan, you're going to need to make sure you tick them off.
Mm.
Right? I mean, but I do like the suggestion that of attacking Bogut. I mean, their greatest strength, they've got a whole bunch of them, the Kings. But their greatest strength this season is what they're doing at the defensive end.
Mm.
Right? And their ability to impose their will on you defensively and get you to take shots from where they want you to take shots from, and then limit you to one attempt, right? So they're the most dominant defensive rebounding team in the league, and you know they're the most far and away the most dominant team in terms of defensive effective field goal percentage. So they're doing all those things really well, and a big part of that is obviously the way they sit on the three-point shooters. They handle the pick and roll with the deep drop, and they force you to shoot mid-range jumpers and floaters and see if you can make them. Now, there's a few things you can do. Like Southeast Melbourne, yes. Simon Mitchell came out of that game, right? And he said, did you hear his comments? We feel like we've got the players to trouble them.
Robertson especially. Yeah, I did hear that, and I did. So you could see that in that second half for sure.
Right. So firstly, he's talking about, we actually think we can take and make those mid-range shots.
Mm.
Guys like Ben Magin, Robertson, Adam Gibson, Kyle Adnan, we saw what he was doing on the weekend. Like, he's like, we feel like we can take. And now I was chatting with him about it and saying, yeah, but that's what the Kings want you to think, right? They want you to think we can beat you that way, because then you'll shoot a lot of them and the numbers will work out their way. And he's saying, well, we think we can make those shots regardless. And then the other thing is, you've got to adjust what you're doing with that on-ball screen. So, you talked about what Southeast Melbourne did to have some success freeing up John Robertson, where they brought that pick way up higher and gave him some extra room so that when he came off it...
It's a three, not a two.
It's a three, right. Yeah. And he had some success with that. And you think back to when Melbourne swept Sydney out of the finals in the semis last year, Bogut was defending the same way. The guy guarding the ball was a different guy, right? It wasn't Casper Ware, the best on-ball defender in the league. It was Jerome Randall, who's not as good. And what they did is Josh Boone came up and he was slapping on those punch screens and drag screens way up near half court for Casper Ware. And you remember that game in Melbourne. Yeah, first 2 minutes, and they were all off those picks.
He destroyed.
Yeah, just went bang, bang, bang. And then as a result, that drew Bogut out. He started finding Boone on rolls and to the rim, and then it opened things up elsewhere, and they picked apart their defense like that. So you're gonna have to kind of execute those types of things. I think you're also going to need to overcome their dominance on the defensive glass, and we saw Melbourne was able to do that in that win. You remember Sean Long? I mean, what he had 4 or 5 offensive rebounds in that game. He had that big one down the stretch, clutch basket off the offensive board that he put back in over Bogut. So I think you're going to need to do that, and you're going to need to slide your feet, keep the ball in front of you, and keep them off the foul line, which, as we saw on the weekend, is very difficult to do.
My next question. Cooks and Prather both signed a 2-year deal, both when they've got a niggling injury coming in. My question to you is, who do you think we see fully healthy first, Prather or Cooks? And if you had to guess at a timeline from either.
That's a good question. I mean, it's not the question that you asked, but Melbourne, I mean, really need Prather back to full health, more so than Sydney need Cooks, right? I mean, he's just a cherry on the top for what they've got going. I would say probably give Prather the advantage there, just because he's already out there on the floor. I mean, he's going to be better for the two games this week, even though it was a bit of a struggle for him. But it's going to be interesting to see whether from here, having dealt with the knee injury that kept him out all last year and lost his spot in Europe, then the clean out that he had earlier this season that kept him off the floor for the first 7 games, and then the back spasms that kept him out for a couple of games recently. If now that he's back on the floor, he's going to be able to stay on the floor from here on out and build some momentum and some rhythm and build that week after week, because really, they're going to be in the finals. So when they need Prather at that level is in February, not right now at the start of December, right? It's not as much of an issue. And if they can get that, I mean, if they can get to February and they've got a healthy Prather who can sit down and maybe you can even play him on Jayshon Tate for periods of time and or make Smalls, it tough for him to... and they've got, you know, a healthy Illy on there to guard Casper Ware for long stretches, then I think that's a completely different matchup. But I would say we'd probably expect to see Prather at full health before Cooks.
Sean Long, recent struggle. Mental, or is he not doing something, you know, play wise?
Well, a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B. It's, I often talk about on the broadcast, like, what are the most fun things in the league to watch? Sure. You know, and like Bryce Cotton heating up is, you know, and Jason Kiddie heating up, those guys that kind of get on a bit of a heater. And then, you know, certain guys in transition or Scott Machado picking things apart on the pick and roll. I think Sean Long frustrated is probably one of the worst things to watch in the league.
Because it's so palpable. Like, you can see it whether you're sitting courtside, whether you're sitting in your TV screen. Maybe if you're just even outside the arena with an ear to the wall, you can hear, you can feel it, can't you?
And I think it really does have a strong negative impact on his team. You know, and that's why when Dean Vickerman saw that stuff starting to happen
shortly
last week against Brisbane, he just put him on the bench and said, no, look, if you're going to be complaining about refereeing calls and it's going to stop you getting back defensively and it's going to reduce your effort at that end of the floor, you need to come and sit down and we'll play someone who's going to who's not going to play that way. So I think he has lost a bit of focus over the last couple of weeks. And it started with Southeast Melbourne running a hard double at him. Every time he caught the ball in the block. Was that last week or the last week?
Last round,
It started there because he's a guy who needs to get his touches, needs to get his buckets. And that kind of energizes him, and that means that he feels good. He knows he's ticking things over at that end of the floor, and that allows him to then have the right sort of focus and energy at the defensive end and put into place all the things that they're teaching him on the day-to-day about how to be a good individual and team defender. But he wasn't getting his buckets in that game, and he was quickly having to get rid of the ball, and I think that, you know, he lost his focus as a result, and he hasn't really been able to recapture it. The next game, Hodgson and Magne really frustrated him into a lot of misses. Cam Oliver got the better of him in Cairns. He had, you know, double-double, that was fine, but Cam Oliver vastly outplayed him in that game. And then, you saw the frustration boiling over against the Kings. So he needs to sort of get past that. And some of that also comes back to his teammates knowing this is actually this is who he is right now. Now, it's a work in progress. We're trying to change that. But one way to avoid that is to make sure he's getting plenty of catches and looks. And I mentioned this on the broadcast a little while ago, watching the Melbourne United train at the Sacramento Kings practice facility during the NBL-NBA games. And in one of those practices, it got a bit testy because Sean Long actually voiced some frustration. I said, can I get a catch down here? Like, I'm sealing up in front of the rim, stepping over my guy. Yeah. Nobody's looking at me. He said, I've set about 500 picks over the last hour, but I'm not getting any touches. And Dean Vickerman came, you know, to support in that practice and said, well, look, he's right. You know, we've got to reward the big fella. We've got to feed the big fella, and that helps us get some balance to our offense. So I think making sure that they do find him in those situations, they get him looks, that keeps him engaged, and that'll help him be more effective at the other end of the floor.
Let's jump to Brisbane. I think you put out a tweet a little while ago that you're on Brisbane Island. Did you mean you're on that island because you think they're good, or because you think they've got the fourth spot, or a bit of both?
I've been on that island since preseason, and I sort of highlighted them as the team I thought that was going to make the top four outside of Perth, Sydney, and Melbourne. Mm. And they have really underwhelmed since, you know, for the most part. Now, having said that, what are they, 5-7?
They're around there. They're yeah. still well in the conversation, for sure.
Right, right. But the eye test is telling us that they just don't have the right mix.
And the trend is down, don't you feel? Yes. Like, especially with Patterson, you brought up in the broadcast, like, it just all the number. I looked at it myself, and it's just trending down.
Yeah, I mean, he's, you know, he's a star. You love how he plays the game, but, I mean, let's call a spade a spade. He's not in peak condition, right? He's not in his... he's not in as good condition as he was last year, and as a result, it impacts he's an elite athlete, right? Yeah. And Corey says it's not a cupcake league. Like, you need to be firing on all cylinders to be your best, and him not being that is still really, really good.
But it's not.
But
it's
they
not,
need what they had from him last year, I think, and his ability to close games. I mean, he had that game-winning bucket over Adelaide on the putback. That was great, but. He hasn't been as impactful in those situations over the course of this season as he was last year. That's fair to say. And I think it's amazing how things play out in the season. Mm. It comes back to how teams were constructed during the offseason, which is why.
Ask.
Well, I mean, it's why I really enjoy the opportunity to go over and cover the summer league for the NBL, because obviously we've got our guys playing over there, but the thing that interests me most is it's right in the heart of the period of time where teams are wheeling and dealing and putting their squads together. And I mean, you get a chance to talk with the coaches, the GMs, right? Well, what are you looking for? Where is your squad at? Sometimes on air, sometimes off air, and and then you sort of see how it plays out from there. And you know, like, there are a couple of stories related to that I find fascinating, and one of them is Cam Oliver. I've mentioned this a few times on the broadcast, the different teams that passed him over, and Cairns snapped him up. Well, Brisbane was one of those, because at the time they were looking for a starting power forward, and they were saying, we want an athletic power forward. We're not re-signing. We're not taking up the option on Best, though. Lamar Patterson is asking for too much, so we've replaced him with Taylor Braun. We don't have enough in our budget to have three, like, star imports, because we have a lot of high-level Aussies. Like, you look at Cairns, they don't have a lot of high-level local players.
No,
they put their money into those three imports, right?
Yeah.
Well, Brisbane's sort of done the opposite. So they say, we can only do two. So one needs to be a budget guy. That's EJ Singler. It would have been Jeremy Kendall had he not got injured. And we're looking for a four-man.
He would have been a nice little touch, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
Alleviated a little bit of that log jam and given them something. Mm-hmm. He was always fun to watch. But sorry, you were saying that.
Yeah. Well, they were looking for a four. And then Andre sort of told me in a Q&A I did recently that Lamar came back to us at that point. They couldn't find someone at Summer League to fit the bill. And he said, actually, you know, I'll take what you're offering. Now, I think that was the moment of truth for the Bullets this season.
Yeah.
And it's a tough one. What do you do in that situation? What they did was say, Lamar Patterson
took it out of gear.
Really, really good. Yeah, he's a really good player. We know he's a great guy. The guys love playing with him. Let's bring him in and make it work. But as a result, they've only actually got one power forward on their roster for mine. Yeah. I mean, Lamanis talks about Singler and, you know, other guy, Taylor Braun and Tarungi. But for me, Mika Vaccone is really their only power forward on their roster. And he's 37 years old and they're finding it difficult playing him extended minutes. So it's almost like an entire position in the game and they just don't have that guy. And I think it's really impacting. And we saw late in that game the other night when Mitch Creek was just bullying EJ Singler in the block, possession after possession. And that's been an issue for him all year. And then the struggles with guys like Tarungi and Glidden, and a lot of that comes down to role definition, right? Like, what is my role on this team? And who's next to me? And who's above me? And who am I ahead of? And it's such a moving feast there that it doesn't seem to be working. Whereas you look at some other teams, you look at a team like Adelaide, and Joey has really clear roles spelled out for
especially
those guys.
Now, yeah.
Yeah, they've worked it out. Okay, now you're coming off the bench. When you do that, you're doing this, so on and so forth, and it's working really well. So I think that I've put out an SOS, yeah. Some smoke signals. Often, I'm hoping someone picks me up on Brisbane Island.
Yeah, hopefully a ferry comes by at some point. let's jump. I mean, the other actually quick question. I mean, like we talked about, you think Glidden's struggles are down to what you said, like knowing your place within the roster. You think that's his biggest problem personally, or is there like a lack of confidence, or is that again coming from not knowing your place in the rotation in the roster?
I think all of the above.
Yeah.
He's had a little bit of kind of injury complications just in recent times, but he was coming off a great. I thought he was really good last year.
I did the numbers. And he's come down from 17th in scoring to like 60th. And the minutes are... like right. It does correspond with minutes. So when we talked about his place in the rotation, like it makes sense. But at the same time, it's like, what has he given... What impression has he given Brisbane to substantiate those minutes?
Right. Well, I mean, you know, and we don't see what goes on the day on the practice court, right? And that has a big impact. If a guy's ice cold after week, day after day at the practice court, turning it over, can't stay in front of anyone, can't hit a bucket, then you go, well, and then they roll into game night, he doesn't play, we go, what? Mm. He was a star. But the guys on the team see what they see at practice. So we don't know that. But we do know what we saw from him last year over the course of his career. He must have played well when he got on the court at the Boomers camp because he played his, you know, shot his way into that spot at the end of that roster. So I think, yeah, I do put down his struggles and his lack of confidence to the logjam they have on the wings. And you can see the lack of confidence is real. I mean, he doesn't have much pep to his step right now. Mm. The turnover he had in that game the other night where he sort of ripped the ball through and it just went out of bounds, and you could see the air come out of his balloon in that moment, and you think, man, that's a guy that's really trying to make it work, but it's not happening right now.
It's been a half-year struggle, but hopefully. I feel like with this team as well, like when they went to Vekona, I felt like that was actually... Mm. It worked well that game, but I did feel like it was a step back on what they had constructed their roster on. Like, it was kind of like a bit of a white flag where they thought, uh-oh, this power forward experiment with the smaller guys is not quite
working. Yeah.
I feel like they should, instead of taking that step backward to Vekona, should have taken the step forward and just gone, you know what? Kadee, Sobey, Patterson, Glidden, and Hodgson, that's our starting five, that's our closing five. We're doing what we said we were going to do in the off season.
Right.
What do you think?
I don't entirely agree. Mm-hmm. I think I liked playing Vekona at the four to start the game, mm-hmm. and I thought it was worth sticking with. Now, we don't know how his body's holding up, whether he can handle that kind of load, because he had a DMP in their last game. He's playing kind of 2 minutes a game apart from that. And starting means, even if you're not playing a big Malcolm, it's going to mean he's going to play about 8, 10, 12 minutes a game. Mm. And maybe he can't handle that right now. I'm not sure. But I thought it did balance out their roster a bit. Now, the other thing that everyone's been calling for is for them to send one of their imports home and replace them with a four man, right? Or some people have been talking about a point guard. But I think the four spot is the most glaring issue.
And with look at the money spend as well, like you've got you've invested there, you've got the totally different chasm the other way.
And the other thing people don't always realize is the contractual situations that exist with these players. So there's the appreciation of the fact that there's a imports are signed with a probationary period in their contract, new imports that have never been played in the league before. And so there's a certain point early in the season that you can tear that contract up, send them home without paying out the rest of their year. Now, that point has passed
that
now.
Point has passed. Okay.
But the suggestion was that early on that they should have done that with Taylor Braun. But what people don't always realize is that not all of these contracts are written up equally.
Right.
So some of these agents say, well, look, Taylor Braun's got this. I don't know if this is the case with him. I presume it might be. Mm-hmm. But for a guy like that, they might say, well, look, he's got these other really good offers elsewhere. You're going to need to take that clause out of the contract for us to sign. You're going to need to guarantee his deal. And so that's not, stuff is often not necessarily public, and the teams don't necessarily want to make that public for whatever reason.
Sure.
And so, you know, we bark from outside that they should be doing this, that, or the other.
But it's not.
But they go, well, geez, we're going to have to pay out his entire deal and then sign another guy. Mm. Our ownership says we don't have the money to do that right now.
And also, you know, like,
so that, those things make it difficult.
By the numbers as well, like, Braun's got, the league-leading sort of assist to turnover. Like, assist to turnover doesn't put points... Oh, well, it does put points to the board, but it doesn't necessarily win you games. But he does do things that you like. Like, you look at him, and I'm quite like, all right, this could work, and I just... I don't know. It's an interesting experiment, but...
Yeah, he's a good player.
I agree.
But he's just not a good... I don't think he's just not the right guy for them, with Lamar Patterson there as well.
Yeah, I agree. Let's jump on to the Illawarra game. Would I be unfair in saying the Illawarra play more team-oriented, more attractive now that Brooks has gone down? Like, do you feel like that roster kind of kicked into place with his departure, or am I being unfair?
No, I think that's fair. I mean, it took them a moment. Their first game after Brooks went down was that against Brisbane in Canberra? I think maybe.
Yeah, I think so.
And they were horrendous in that game. That was a really bad game, and they were really bad. And so they were sort of shell shocked by his loss at that point, I think. But no, I think that they're. Their primary issue at the start of the year was that they had 12 guys who were there to play minutes. Right? We talk about like role definition. There was no one at sort of at the. You look at the end of say. You know, a few rosters. You look at Brisbane and you see Tyrell Harrison sitting at the end of that bench. Or you look in, certain rosters around the league, and there are guys that are towards the end of the bench that know...
Like a Sydney Lucas Walker, like they know they're going to get...
Right, Jordan Hunter is a fully contracted player. Right, you're not trying to get 12 guys into a game, but he was trying to do that at the start of the season, Matt. And I was saying right from the get-go, and he and I were chatting in Vegas, like his biggest challenge was going to be, you know, how he managed those rotations. And I think having a couple of guys out has shortened the rotation for
Seth
him.
Frolling as well,
He hasn't played for 4 or 5 games. So
what's he got? What injuries he got?
An ankle. An ankle that he hurt at practice. So he's just kind of got less guys to work with, and it's shortened the rotation. He's got a 10-man rotation now, and often it becomes 9 if, you know, say Greeter or Angus Glover isn't playing particularly well. And it's kind of everyone, it's sort of made that a little bit more, understood, and kind of there's a bit more rhythm and regularity to their rotation.
Trains on the tracks. Yeah, it's like people know where it's going.
Now, is it, you know, is it a recipe for winning games?
Yeah. Against Cairns,
if they can play Cairns every week. I mean, that team's not going to win a lot of games, right? I mean, Lamella, it's a great recipe for developing some of the guys, Sunday Detch and, you know, some of these kind of guys, which is, I think is going to be good for them moving forward if they can keep them. And it's great for helping Lamella get triple doubles and maybe be the number one pick in the draft, which is another thing that they're trying to achieve this season.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, like...
Will they win games? Not necessarily.
Yeah. But I don't know if they... I don't know. I've been, you know, on the record from throughout this period of time. I don't think they should bring someone in. I still think that they're
not
about
even,
to...
Not even a one.
Sorry?
Not even a one. Not one... Import another importer.
No.
Okay.
No, I don't. No, I think, you know, like, this team's not going to make the finals, right?
Yeah, so, true.
So then achieve those other things that you can achieve while you can, like LaMelo Ball's rocking out, and you know you can develop Sunday Detch, Sam Frawley when he comes back, Dan Greeter, you need to keep him progressing, Angus Glover, like these guys are really important to the future of your program, and they need minutes to develop. So, I think that's what they should do. And what they need is for LaMelo to play more like he did against Cairns and less like he did against New Zealand.
Yeah, one of however many.
Right, where the ball's sticking in his hands and he's missing a whole bunch of shots.
Yep, I agree. Question with them, Boone. I'll actually pose this question to you. Do you think if Southeast Melbourne... I shall put it two ways. If we could wind back the clock, do you think Brisbane would have... Who would have... offer this contract first? Do you think Brisbane would have offered the contract to Cam Bairstow quicker, or do you think South East Melbourne would have given their money to Josh Boone? Who do you think, kind of, where would his best situation, do you think, and with Brisbane?
South East Melbourne were in talks with Josh Boone.
For sure. Him and Wesley again. I was actually really excited to see that again, because I felt that was where his best value was, Boone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could have got a lot more out of him with him. But yeah, sorry, you were saying, Liam?
Yeah, well, I agree. Would have been, and they, and Tommy Greer and Simon Mitchell felt the same. You know, he's kind of the guy that we need, right? Like a pick and roll big. You can see in Keith Benson that they were trying to get
the mold
in Josh Boone. Yeah, so they were trying to make that happen. They didn't manage to make that happen because at the time they were still waiting on how things were going to play out with Mitch Creek.
Yeah,
and so if you and they needed to wait and see whether they were going to have him or not. So if they weren't going to have him,
that changes your conversation. Yeah,
it changes. It might even change what kind of import they're looking. Maybe they go for an import three and they try and get a, you know, a Duop Reith or a you know, Mango Matiang or some guy that can play at the five as a local, and they get an import three. So they had to kind of wait and see how that was going to play out. But Josh Boone, he's at the point of his career where he's like, well, you know, I got to sign. Like,
yeah,
there's other
early
teams that want me. Right.
He'd obviously been bitten against Melbourne when he signed late, because I think looked at it. I think he signed in sort of like a month after the year ended, instead of, you know, a month before the season started, the year before. So he was keen to put pen to paper.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as the word got out that Melbourne were going with Sean Long put that word out. Matt Flynn's been on the record saying, I just called Josh Boone straight away and said, mate, really? They don't want you, I do.
Yeah.
And you hope that he had a chat with Matt Campbell before he did that, just to check in that everyone's on the same page. But that's how that played out. So Josh Boone saying to South East Melbourne, well, I've got these other options. I'd love to stay in Melbourne. It's just, you guys are building something good, but unless we can do this right away, I'm going to sign up there. So that's how that played out. And with Bairstow, I think they just made the decision that they wanted to be faster. They were bringing in Sobey. And the part of the conversation with Sobey was, he would have been talking about, well, you guys have played pretty slow, and I'm a up and down kind of guy, and they're like, no, we're speeding up.
Yeah, I agree.
And we're going to get an athletic four, and we're going to be faster, and it's going to suit your style. So they were just always going in a different direction there.
And then the other team to throw in there is the Wildcats. Where, like, if they could have another look at Boone, because I look at Boone, I'm like, oh, he would actually make sense, and he knows the NBL well. He's probably quite around the Wildcats, wouldn't take him long to pick up a Perth system. And then they must be looking at Sunday Dett going, oh, Sunday Dett, sorry, just going, oh, geez, he would have been the perfect off the bench. Would they have found him minutes with Martin and Norton? Hard to say, but a player that defensively minded would always help the Wildcats, I would have thought.
Yeah. Although I think there's a couple of things to that. The Hawks, Matt Flynn's playing Sunday Dett in the right spot. He's not a point guard.
No,
he played some point guard last year for Perth, and he did a great job considering that's not what he is. But he's a 2-3.
Right.
And so he's that's why he's having some success. He's so good in those spots. He can guard the one.
But he's not.
But offensively, you don't want him running your team. You want him kind of on the wings, filling a lane, attacking off the dribble in that way. But Perth wanted him back. They didn't offer him the minutes. They offered him a contract. And then the other thing, you talk about them and Josh Boone. They were involved in the Cam Oliver conversations in Las Vegas as well, the Wildcats. Oof. And I misrepresented this on the broadcast a couple of weeks ago. And I'm planning on talking about it a little bit tomorrow on NBL Overtime, but right. I'll give you the scoop. Trevor Gleeson wanted Cam Oliver.
Oh, that would have been a marriage in heaven.
And he was a bit... What I'm told is that he was annoyed that Oliver went to Cairns instead. And part of that is, you know, like the agent looking at that and going, actually, this is going to be a better situation for my client and so on and so forth. And it's working out great.
That sounds to be pretty sound logic ahead of time, yeah.
But imagine that Wildcats team with Oliver at the five.
Yeah, it's a better team.
Yeah.
And Oliver's got this body, like his physical strength, I mean, you look at the strength in his neck and his shoulders and arms, and he's got this weird physique where he looks like Arnold Schwarzenegger. He comes down, his waist is so thin. Like, he is, and he has that corkscrew movement because he's so muscular. Yeah. I mean, him and the Wildcats would have been very, very quick and very close friends, I would have thought.
But there are a few teams. Like, he was offered to New Zealand.
Oh, wow.
He was offered to New Zealand before they signed Chris Obekpa, which has turned into Brandon Ashley. He was offered to South East Melbourne.
Oh, and most of them have been overlooked, or he said, no, Cairns is where I'm going to get the most minutes and most opportunity.
Most of them overlooked him.
Wow.
But Perth wanted him. And now they overlooked him because there were character red flags about Cam Oliver. But
we have seen those somewhat presented. Play's been up and down a little bit, inconsistent defensively. That, like, when they lose, it's normally because it's like he hasn't quite had the game that's expected. So I see that, I guess.
Yeah, but I mean, I think my understanding is that the types of things that were being thrown out there were things that you don't necessarily see on the court.
Right, okay.
And concerns around those other types of things. But my understanding is he's been terrific up in Cairns. And I mean, I think everything that he's been saying and what we see out there on the floor, he's been outstanding. And his body language, for the most part, has been really, really good. And he's just been a tremendous signing for them. So you tip your hat to Mike Kelly and Mark Beecroft, Troy Stone. They met with him. Apparently he and Mike Kelly really hit it off right out of the gate.
Well, who could,
he had an
who
ankle
wouldn't,
problem.
Mike Kelly's a guy, nice guy.
Yeah, who doesn't hit it off with Mike Kelly? But he had an ankle problem that restricted him last year in the G League, and he was saying, you know, I just want to get back to enjoying being healthy, enjoying the game again and balling out, and they hit it off and they signed him and they haven't looked back.
That's good stuff. It's kind of like when you say off-court stuff, kind of like a little bit of another sort of far north Queensland guy, used to play for Townsville, Russell Ellis, if you remember, before he came to the NBL, had that incident where I think he choked a referee or something like that, but I don't know if Cam Oliver's to that extent, but it's just, you take a risk.
Not to that extent.
New Zealand. When is Lowe set to return? Like, I think you would say that when you watch their games, interior defense and size and rebounding is an issue for them. When is he set to return from that fractured skull, if he's to come back, or what's going on?
Yeah, he's getting close. I'm told unlikely this week, which is interesting because in the post-game presser the other night, Dan Shamir was asked about the three guys that he's got out in Webster, Hobson and Lowe, and who he's expecting to have back next week. And he said he's pretty confident that they'll have two of those guys back next week. Right. And my understanding, my mail is that Rob Lowe's at least one more week away. So that would suggest that Webster and Hobson will be back, and that Lowe's a little bit away. But I think one thing that's helped him is having Finn Delaney back.
Yeah, that's true.
How good was he on the weekend?
Brilliant. He was great.
Yeah. So, I mean, he helps in that regard. 20 points, 10 rebounds, and just gives them that extra size and strength down low that they need.
And relieves Abercrombie. I think Abercrombie was just physically out of his depth in that position and asked to do too much at where he's at in his career.
Yeah, and then you can put him in the four spot, like when you feel like it gives you a matchup advantage rather than playing a big load of minutes there. Yeah, they're interesting to see what they can put together now in this next little stretch.
I saw
where they have
their schedule kind of gets a little bit easier for me. Like, I don't think they play Perth, Sydney, or Melbourne in the next sort of 10 games. This is Hugh Bendon put out a tweet. I was like, that made me prick up a bit.
Yeah. And if they can, you know, they could keep the whole organization on the straight and narrow for a little while and get these guys back on the floor, see if they can piece some wins together.
Braswell, have you spoken to him? Has he spoken to anyone like that? He was there, he's gone, and it's just white noise. There's been nothing that you've heard of him.
I've spoken to him. I reached out to him during the off season as it was all playing out. That situation, obviously, as you know, has sort of made its way through the court system. That's why Dan Shamir is the director of basketball
operations
at that team and not the head coach. So KB was not really able to speak openly about his situation for legal reasons.
Sure.
Yeah, because that was all playing out at the time. So, that was a mess. I mean, that really...
Because it interrupted Shamir. Like, Shamir couldn't... he was like, well, am I coming? Am I going? It interrupted their preseason terribly.
Big time. Mm. And honestly, it was the start and a big reason why I put a red line through the Breakers in terms of making the playoffs this season. You know, I mean, it's those types of things. Like within a league at this level and the culture that exists within this league and the teams, you need to have all of those things within an organization like running well
from day one as well.
That all needs to be going well for your team to have on-court success, you know, and for everyone to be pulling in the right direction and pulling together, and as a result of when all of that stuff is well and you've got good buy-in across the board, then when things get hard and tough in games and you go on a 3-game losing streak like the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix just went on, you continue to have everyone pushing and pulling in the same direction.
They were scared. When
those things aren't and you know those things are happening in the background, and then you're going to end up with a team where you go, well, you have some guys that were like KB guys, right? And they're all upset with how KB was treated over the off season. Then you have other guys, oh, okay, here's my opportunity because KB didn't like me, and you know that you just. I mean, there's change. There's always change that happens in an organization. I just didn't like the way that was managed.
Yeah, no, makes sense. What was I going to say? I mean, the other thing I've sort of thought with that team is, did they not quite evaluate what they had in Webster? And in a way, their imports have kind of, in a Brisbane, but nowhere near that extent, have kind of come over the top of him. And that's why now when we see one injury to Rob Lowe, who was not a particularly coveted free agent, when he goes down, like they've just got this hole because they maybe thought that Webster wasn't, well, he had a bad injury year and there was that talk of sort of worse statistically speaking and all that sort of stuff. Do you feel like that is another issue as well?
Not necessarily. I mean, has that limited Sec Henry from being his absolute best over the course of the season? I mean, how well Webster's playing and him playing ahead of him? Maybe that's, you know, we saw what he was able to do on the weekend with Webster out of the lineup, and he just exploded and was his best self. Like, so maybe to that extent. But I mean, I think that came into the, you know, as they were putting their team together, and they said, all right, well, we've got RJ Hampton. He's going to be our starting point guard. We're going to do that Next Stars thing. Jared Weeks is going to be our backup. Once that's how it played out, once Shea Yulee decided he wanted out. And then they go, okay, well, we're going to use all three of our import spots. One's going to be a big, one's going to be, you know, like a five, one's going to be either a 3-4. They were saying if it's a 3, we'll start Findlayney. If it's a 4, we'll start Abercrombie.
Right.
And then and we're going to get a guard so that we've got some, you know, like in our guard rotation, we've got some extra scoring punch. So that's what they ended up doing. And the plan was with Scotty Hobson coming in to start Finn Delaney, Hobson at the 3, Delaney at the 4, but his injury kind of has messed that lineup up for most of the start of the season, and they've been trying to scramble it all together.
That's a big injury. Like, I think people, like with Rice, for example, when you first heard Rice, were you like, okay, great talent, worth the risk, or were you sort of like, too hot to handle? What did you think?
Too hot to handle,
yeah.
It was... Wouldn't have gone anywhere near it with a 10-foot pole.
Yeah, his departure from Europe was pretty explosive.
But that was Dan Shamir's team.
I know, but he must have said, listen, I think I can handle it, I can do it, and it just didn't. And I don't really apportion much blame to Shamir in New Zealand. It's a personal thing like that. Nowhere would anyone on the Breakers have said you can go out tonight. All right, you can go. You know, that's not a conversation that was had. So we feel
differently about this, James.
Okay,
I think. Well, when Glenn Rice was first signed, there were a whole bunch of people like myself, Dylan Boucher, obviously had vocal, these concerns with his comments, and a whole bunch of people saying, "Whoa, hold on, look at this guy's history. This is not going to go well."
And
Dylan Boucher was saying, essentially, I wouldn't sign this guy in fear that something like that's going to happen while he's a Breaker. Within 2 weeks, something like that happens in a big way. You know, like it's not like...
how did this happen?
Right. The red flag was there. You think of the analogy like with Illawarra last year when they signed Jordan Jed and Cedric Jackson in the backcourt. And we all go, but you've got no shooting in your starting backline at all.
Good point.
That's not going to go well. And then over the course of the season, they had no shooting in their backcourt, and it didn't go well. You know, like sometimes you can kind of see these things ahead of time.
Let's jump on to the strange love relationship between Illawarra, Cairns and Perth. Do you have an explanation for how Illawarra can beat Cairns, Cairns can beat Perth, and Perth can badly beat Illawarra? What is there about these three teams that either they have or don't have that sort of locks them into this strange
puzzle? Is it a love triangle?
I think we'd call it a love triangle. I'm comfortable with that.
Okay. I guess sometimes that just happens, right? Like different teams have different strengths and weaknesses, and sometimes they, I guess to stick with the analogy, they marry up in a certain way in certain matchups, and as a result that happens, you know. Like, I mean, I think about like Illawarra beating Cairns. Like Cairns are very susceptible on the defensive glass, right? Their finishing possessions on the defense, they rank last in the league in defensive rebounding percentage. So when Illawarra come in to play them, you think, well, what do Illawarra need to get done in this game if they're going to win? Well, one place they could gain an advantage, because they can be a team that's a bit of a problem on the offensive glass, maybe if they get a whole bunch of second chance opportunities, they could win this game. And they go out and they have 26 offensive rebounds in that game in Cairns. Set a new 40-minute record, and it's like, well, one of their strengths just monstered one of their opponent's weaknesses.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's sometimes in those, you know, those results, it's just what we're strong at, what they're strong at, what we're weak at, and where, you know, where one team might be able to gain advantage.
Yeah. I think particularly, as you said, it rebounding and three-point shooting, you look at all those wins, one of the other teams has had sort of an aberration statistically in their three-point shooting. Like, I think Illawarra had that game where I think Mallow hit a bunch of threes. And then...
Tim Conrad.
Cairns have had huge games shooting the ball up. When they would beat Perth and Perth, I think they shot over 50% from the outside. So when it is, I think, more than being something that's like, oh, that's going to happen every time, it's just the way it's gone, where they've just seemingly caught fire in this odd little ring of rosy between the three.
Yeah. And that matchup, Perth and Illawarra, I mean, they smacked them in Perth, but that was a tough game in Wollongong a few weeks back. Was it a 5-point game, I think, in the end?
Certainly closer than in Perth, that's for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it felt like the Wildcats were kind of in control. They came up big down the stretch, but I thought the Hawks hung pretty tough in that game.
Yeah, agreed. Liam, that's all my questions. My last one for you, though, is when you're a fan sitting back and you're just watching the game, who's your favourite player and team to watch? They don't have to be on the same squad. Who's the guy you just like, because you're a player, who do you like to watch and think, oh, maybe that guy was like me when I played, or maybe he was totally different? What grabs you?
Yep. I love watching Scott Machado this season.
Yeah, likewise.
Love him. He's and just the way he runs that team.
Never out of a game with him on the court.
Right.
Never.
And you know, coming into the season, thinking about that team, Cam Oliver, Majuk Deng, Kwot Noi, I'm thinking, oh my God, that's some mouths and some egos to feed, right? And I thought, oh, good on them for signing a guy like Scott Machado, because that could. And how's the chemistry within that team this year? And it's a lot of it, I think, comes back to Machado, just making sure everyone gets their looks and everyone's getting plenty of opportunities. So I love watching him, honestly. I know he's much maligned. I love watching Chris Golding.
Yeah, I love
just because he's everything that I wasn't as a player. Just with his incredible shot making
and super
ability.
Confidence. Yeah,
yeah,
he's
got
a swagger about him for sure.
So those guys who can get the whole arena working out of the palm of their hand in a certain big moment. Like Golding, Casper Ware, Bryce
Ware's
Cotton.
Incredible.
Those guys that can just make the whole place just lose themselves in their own performance. I love watching those guys.
I think the guy who's set to break, who I'm really enjoying watching this year, enjoyed last year, but especially this year, is Mitch McCarron. We were talking before about how Long can sort of not get his touches or not quite have things go his way and fall out of a game. Mitch McCarron, and that's what makes it so palpable and obvious with Long, is because Mitch McCarron's almost the opposite. He just keeps chugging along through the game. He doesn't get a lot of attempts, but he plays through it. He impacts other stuff when he's not scoring. Really enjoy watching him play. I don't know if you're the same.
Yeah, no, no, for sure. Mitch Creek is kind of a little bit like that as well. Yeah. He's got a little bit more star quality.
Yeah, but just bigger and stronger. Yeah.
You kind of notice his impact a little bit more, but the way he just plays every possession at that level and he's all about the team, wraps his arm around his teammates at all times. Like, yeah, he's those guys are great to watch for sure.
Yeah, agreed. Liam, thanks very much for this. I appreciate it.